Sound one right. Beginning of Visit with Shirley with Rick and Debbie this Friday morning, the 2nd of March, 73. Channel 1 right, and beginning a visit with Shirley, with Rick and Debbie, this Friday morning, the 2nd of March, 73. Channel 1 right, and beginning a visit with Shirley, this with Rick and Debbie, this Friday morning, the 2nd of March, 73. Channel 1 right, and beginning a visit with Rick and Debbie, this Shirley, with Rick and Debbie, this Friday morning, the 2nd of March, 73.
The only thing I've got here that is worth having.
Oh, they're beautiful.
Why don't you send this one?
I don't know why he does that to me. I have to go out there and look at those pretty animals and go home and look at my skinny ones.
It's not from what I hear.
Oh,
your prizes.
Boy, I tell you, I'm on top of the world this morning.
My
telling
gosh.
You. We got some good animals.
I didn't know you had such fine animals.
I tickled like a dog. I don't know what to do. It makes you feel like you're worth what your work is worthwhile, you know.
Yes.
But these kids that call me and they're screaming, they can't talk to you. They're screaming, they're so excited, you know.
Gosh.
And Bourbon went over to the market. He doesn't know this girl from Adam. And she came out and she jumped right up in his arms, you know.
Oh.
He says, my gosh, he says, I didn't even know her from Adam. And she comes swinging her arms around me. He says, I thought at first she had the wrong party. So she really was tickled. Golly, I wanted to go so bad. Oh, I wanted to be there so bad yesterday.
And you couldn't make it.
Well, I couldn't be in two places at one time. You see, all the kids was getting awards over at the Cub Scouts and the Boy Scouts and the Weblos, and even Bourbon walked off with an award yesterday.
Don't count.
I'm telling you, it was a night to be remembered. We didn't get in until about 10:30, and Johnny still wasn't home. And Bourbon had dropped him off at 7:30 in the morning, and he was over there until 10:30 last night. All day long. Poor kid, he was dragging.
Oh, he was?
Yeah.
Well, he getting used to work, isn't he?
Boy, he pitched right in and he helped those kids get those steers ready for that ring, you know?
Oh, did he?
Oh, yeah, in his spare time. They had about 2 hours in the morning leisure, you know, that he didn't have. See, he went over there to judge.
Yeah.
And to work up some points for his class for the FFA.
Yeah.
And then they had a chapter steer that they were going to show over there. So he was going to show the chapter steer because the boy couldn't handle him that raised him. And I said, well, Johnny, that's going to make you look bad because you've never worked with a bull. He said, well, somebody's got to do it, and our school's got to show a chapter steer. He said, I'm not going to let him refuse to show him because he can't handle him. He said, I'll get in there and do my best if it's the worst thing. So he went on over, but he was so busy judging, and he was doing such a good job judging for the class that they just left him alone, and they let the boy show the bull that or the steer that had raised him, you see, for the school chapter.
Mm-hmm.
The bull was donated by the agriculture teacher, Baker of Hawthorne.
Oh.
And it was a little Angus steer, but he brought Hawthorne to shame. So now Johnny says, boy, says Mr. Baker, you better let me have the chapter steer next year. He says, we got to get up here out of the mud, you know.
Oh, he did. The boy
did. It brought 56 cents a pound. Didn't weigh anything, and he couldn't handle it in the ring. It was so wild.
Oh.
And it was really a disgrace. So
they'd
been far better off if they hadn't showed the animal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that'll really show up.
Mr. Baker, sure. And he said, well, they've got to learn, so. But it really hurts the others. It really works. You see, like Johnny and the priest boy from Hawthorne. These kids really got their heart in it. But this kid, I don't know why he let him raise the steer. I don't think he's had him up in the lot twice this year.
Oh.
And hasn't been feeding him.
Just hadn't been handled.
No. He would have made a nice bull, but I think he was stunning.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really discouraging to Johnny. But those animals that he knew, you know, that we sold to the 4-H girls and boys over there, and one girl in particular that has Big Red. She has Big Red. That's the one that won the fourth
place.
Yeah.
That's the one you should have kept.
Well, that's the one we wanted to keep, along with Patrick, but we couldn't afford to feed both of them, so we kept Patrick.
You can't do that.
Yeah.
You see, you can't afford not to.
Well, that's true. I found that out. No.
And then if one of them, you see, Patrick.
But you see, he's feeding a heifer and two calves and the bull, and that was taking all his money that he was making. And we're not supposed to get into this, you see.
Yeah, yeah, so to speak.
And so we let him do what he could. But you see, he took all his money that he had. He even had to cut down on the feed for his heifer and two calves in order to feed the bull, to pay for the bull's medical expenses,
yeah.
You see, because we had such a time with him. Oh, he was ready to throw up the whole thing when he didn't get to go to Tampa with his bull. But you never know that bull was sick? You want to see him. I never saw anything like it. What would he have been if he hadn't gotten sick?
Yeah,
he was sick there 2 months.
These things down here make two of them, wouldn't he?
He's a brother to these yearlings down here.
That you just looked at.
Yeah, well, this deer here, he's nothing
year.
Compared
well,
to that.
Well, this deer no good. He's
yeah.
a
dog. He's the only steer I saw.
Well, I meant the heifers.
Oh, the heifers?
There's three or four.
Oh, yeah, he's heavier than any of those heifers.
Way younger.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, way.
And they think they.
But you see that big red that we sold
yeah.
when she bought him shortly after we bought him from you. He was about 6-7 months old, around there, around 7 months.
Yeah.
He was 6 months when I got him from you, and she got him about a month later.
Yeah.
She had him weighed, and he weighed right at 650 pounds, something like that. He lost a little bit after we took him over to our place because of being off of the cow and everything, man, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. You took him right off the cow.
All right. When she took him through the ring, he only weighed 855 pounds, so she didn't put much feed in. 855 pounds.
But he was a thick one.
But she'd had him 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't put the feed in.
They told her if she had put the feed to that bull, if he'd have weighed at least from 75 to 100 pounds more, she would have walked away with first prize. First place.
Well, let me tell
so
you,
she's learned her lesson there.
Yeah.
So she said, the next one I get, she said, I'm going to really push the feed to it. But a lot of them were disqualified because they were too fat.
They had to be just right, don't they?
Mm-hmm. So Johnny's, I would say, is on the fat side right now. So we're going to have to cut him down.
Oh, really?
Or take him out and muscle him up by walking him, you see, quite a bit. letting him loose in the pasture out there for a while. Putting him on the ryegrass. That ryegrass is going to make him fat. So muscle up, it'll tone his muscles up a little bit more.
Yeah.
But he needs to get more exercise and get around more where he can, get some of that shaky.
You got too much hay in.
Yeah. All he does is sit there and eat hay. Even when he was so sick he couldn't swallow, with that sore lung that he had down there, he'd eat hay.
He'd eat hay rather than feed.
Yeah. He didn't think nothing of eating a bale and a half a day.
Charlie.
Bale and a half a day is what that Johnny was feeding him, along with feed, trying to get him to
and
eat.
That's one of your bales.
Feed. Yeah, that's one of those heavy bales. I'm telling you, that's the hay-eatingest bull I ever saw.
Yeah.
And boy, you go out there now, he even sees anybody walking toward the barn, he runs around the side of that barn in his pen, and he's got his nose right in the trough.
Waiting
for his feed. You can't get near the barn, and he doesn't run from that lot into the barn and around into his pen and got his nose in that trough. And he stands there until you give him something. He's comical as he can be.
Johnny has loved him, hasn't he?
Oh, I don't know how in the world he's going to sell it. But he's going to have to sell him at the bull sale in Ocala. That's what he wants to do. He said Mr. Baker and he were talking about it. And what he wants to do is try to get his expense that he's got in the medical, for the medical expenses in him and his feed out of him. And try to clear at least $500 or $600. If he can. But I told Mr. Baker I didn't see how in the world he can do that. Because he's got quite a bit in him. And every day, you see, he keeps pouring more feed. He feeds him a bucket full in the morning and a bucket full at night. And that doesn't satisfy him. When I go down there, you'd think he'd never ate. He never had breakfast. So I give him a little more. I can't help it. He's getting fat, and I know it, but I can't help it. I can't pass him up. When he goes and runs to that trough, if it's nothing but a handful, I got to give him something.
Oh. You just got an actor, a performer over
Oh,
there.
he is a card.
Yeah.
He never has kicked, or he never has tried to buck anybody. He leads real well. I can lead him anywhere around the place. Take him by the chain, you know, and just lead him. He'll follow you any place. But he's just
What about the one in Tampa?
That was Donna, the heifer that James Terrell came out and roped her when she was 3 months old out of the herd. He just threw a rope over her. He missed the first time, and he threw it the second time, and he roped her.
Yeah.
And he picked him up. He's a big kid. He's 17 years old, and he's twice as big as Berman. I never saw such a kid, boy, for 17 years old. But he went out there, he's 19 now, but he went out there and he roped that calf and he reached down and he picked that 3-month-old calf. You know, they're quite stocky at 3 months
old. Yes,
today.
They are.
They're quite alive.
Once you start picking them up.
And he picked that calf up and he held his head this way and he held the rear quarters out this way and he carried that thing all the way across 2 fields to the barn and fed them up until they were ready to go, and then they put them in the truck and took her off. And she's 2 years old now, and she won the state grand championship in Tampa.
Why, Shirley?
She did. And she came out of one of those old cows over there at Santa Fe River Ranch, you know.
Yeah.
And she wasn't anything extra special.
Well,
the old cow was. Well, the calf was a nice-looking calf out of the
uh-huh.
out of that cow. But that's it. Some of the sorriest-looking cows have the best-looking calves.
Yes. How are you going to judge a cow?
You can't. You have to judge a cat, you know. But at 3 months, you got to have a good eye for a calf, you know, because you can't really tell much till they're 5 and 6 months old. I can't.
I can.
But he did. He picked that calf. He says, that's one I... Well, that was my favorite, too, out of the bunch.
Yeah.
He wanted it. And because it was for the FFA, I let him have it. But I wanted to really, you know, keep that one and raise it. But... I'm glad he got it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm glad he got it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So.
I think that sort of helps you.
That's
too.
The one we've been following, you see. Every time he shows it, we go around to the shows to watch
oh,
it.
Yeah.
See, the one that was showed in Callahan that we've
uh-huh.
gone up there twice now to see him show. They promised me they're going to send some pictures. It was taken of her in the ring with the blanket, you know, and the rosettes. He had an arm full of rosettes. He had others beside Donna to show where he walked away with everything. He got everything, plaques and, oh, gee, I just wish I'd have been married. The Paul Herford Association gave him an extra special plaque for all his work and his effort with his animals. 17 years old. I'm really proud of him. He's going to Lake City to forestry school. And if he makes it. Now, he's going to be 1 out of 20, I think. If he makes it, he'll have to be I think they're going to take 3 out of the 20. And he's got his application in, so I hope he gets to go. And Johnny is watching him awful close, you know. And he writes often to get his, get information from James and his opinion on different things that he should do with his animals. So if they're right close. And I think it's helping Johnny to get more interested in this business.
Yeah.
But boy, I don't have to worry anymore. That girl that bought Big Red and came up with fourth place at that, her and Johnny are like this.
Yeah.
She's the sweetest, cutest little thing you ever saw. Her name is Frances McGehee.
Uh-huh.
And when she came out to buy that Big Red, I thought her and Johnny were going to have to leave together, you know. They were... discussing what she was going to do with it and everything. And when it was time to go, her father almost had to go off and leave her. You know, they were in such a deep conversation over these animals. So now he spent the whole day with her. He bought her dinner and a couple of Cokes during the day, and they were together all, and he helped her get prepared because she hadn't slept for 3 nights. She's been so excited and having to work with her animals that she didn't have time to really sleep. She said that she hadn't had. She's home today from school, and I called her before I came over to congratulate her on her work that she did with the bull. But she said, "I want to tell you," she said, "Mrs. Dodd," she said, "I sure was glad Johnny was there to give me some support." She said, "He got pitched in, and he helped me get my bull ready for the steer ready for the ring. He curried him down and cleaned him up, and washed him down and everything else. And she said, I never would have made it without Job. She sounded real desperate, you know. That,
but they had somebody interested.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And he was the only one there that she knew, and she was the only one there that he knew. So, really, that, well, he ran into Dr. Anderson up there at the sale, and he ran into several buyers that's been out and bought animals from us. And,
Well, that's nice.
Yeah. Now, this is Gainesville, yes.
Oh, Gainesville, yes.
Yeah.
It should be in the paper all about this. I can't wait for the paper
you know
to come
it
out.
Well.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah,
but she could have gotten first place if she had fed that animal just a little more. I told her to be sure, you know, push the feed to him, especially the last 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she worked him good, though. She worked good with him. And she was always afraid of overfeeding him. You see, getting them too fat, because she saw so many the year before being disqualified because they were too fat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's why she didn't feed them anymore. But she said now she can judge more or less how to feed for the next year. So.
Well, that's important, isn't it?
Well, you see, Johnny, here he is pushing all this feed to this bull now, and he's got him a little on the heavy side. Here she had hers a little on the thin side. So now they got to compromise to find out how much to really, you know, feed the next year. Maybe they can come up
now
with the right amount.
But there ought to be somebody they can ask.
Well, they won't do it. They don't volunteer any information. That's what makes me so mad. You'd think that they'd volunteer a little information, you know, to help the boys along. But they make the boys do this on their own. I guess it's good, you know,
and you can't tell
them? I can say, well, I do this or I do that, but I can't say you do this or you do that. They got to. They got to do it themselves.
Yeah.
They got to keep record of all that and everything.
Sure.
So.
Well, in other words,
I'm not supposed to even say, well, you know, I do this or I do that, but.
You mean?
I do. I can't help. I can't keep my mouth shut.
You mean they're not supposed to ask anybody for advice?
They are. They can ask, but it's up to the people that know anything about it and to let them on their own, to let them do this on their own. Try to start them off on the right, you know, foot and tell them what to look for in an animal, try to teach them the points. They study this for months before they go into it.
Well.
So, and
now, who's the girl up there?
Frances McGehee.
Yeah. Oh, yes, she's
there. Yeah. She's the one that had bought Big Red.
And she studied too.
Oh yeah, she had to take. See, they all had to take this. This is the pencil work they have to do before they bookwork they have to do too before they go in.
They can't go into the other book without the.
That's right. They should have this bookwork. See, now Johnny isn't very good in the classroom, on anything. He'd rather be outside. Doing something, putting an engine together or something like this. But they have so many months that they have to study do their book work. Now, he does it, but he's awful slow at it, you know. He's slow in reading anyway. He's always been slow in reading, and I think that's just what keeps him back. But when he goes out into the field, he can leave all the others behind because he likes field work. It makes no difference what he's doing, if it's building fence, fixing an engine, or working with cattle.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any. It's like his daddy, you see. He follows Vermin around and he's interchangeable in what he can do. So I guess it's all working out for the best. It's all experience. But if you tell them what to do, keep telling them, you know, tell them to do this and tell them to do that, they don't use their own mind or imagination in what to do.
No.
So I think it's.
That's right. You got
to. I think it's wise to let them alone.
Time Lewis.
And he's grown up more this year. In his judgment, you know.
He's 17?
No. Johnny is, he won't be 16 until
not
16. April.
Not 16.
Not until
man.
April. So.
And he's huge.
We won't be 17 years married until next week. So he better not be 17.
Well, now last night, now that was another.
Oh, I wish you could have been there. I wish you could have been there. It all turned out differently than I thought it was to begin with. I wasn't there on a Thursday morning when they had a meeting, and they were discussing on how they were going to have the menu and what they were going to do and how they were going to serve. So everyone, they decided, would bring their own meal and have their own table and let the family eat, you know, among themselves. I didn't care much for that, and I was afraid a lot of people wouldn't come. And one family didn't because of that. And so after they met last night, they put all the food to one side, you know, and used it as a covered dish affair.
Yeah.
Did it that way, which is better because you get a chance to mix among the crowd and get to visit with others other than the family. You can do that every night of the week. So it worked out better. No, I haven't either, but that's the way they had me believing they were going to do it until we changed things around last night. But as a result, we had one family that kind of was peeved about it, but I'll have to go talk with them. But anyhow, we had the banquet dinner, and it was a lovely, lovely supper. And then the Cub Scouts put on a little skit, Den 1, and then the Cub Scouts for Den 2 put on another skit, and then the Weblos put on a skit. And that turned out to be just lovely. All the skits, everybody, you know, was just really enthused over it. So after that, then they had the awards. And Tommy come out with his wolf badge. He was the first one to get his wolf badge. And he came back, and he was just as proud as he could be. He was grinning from ear to ear, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, I tell you, I wish I had a picture of the way he looked when he came back with that wolf badge. And, of course, the mother has to go up and put the pin on him, you know, and take the badge and congratulate him and walk back to the seat with him. And he was looking at everybody, just grinning. I thought he was so cute. And then Danny's turn came. He had his Aerolite badge for the Weblos, and he got two achievement medals.
Yeah.
So that's five achievement medals he's won so far. And then Timmy got the Tenderfoot badge, which is very difficult, very hard to do. And he's been working months on that, and he finally won. Yeah, he just finally won it. So I thought it was all over, and just before we dismissed them, they had awards for the leaders. So Berman got his. And boy, you think those kids crowed, you should have heard him. When he got back to the table, he just, well, look at him, what I got, you know. He passed it around to everyone at the table. And he got home and he says, well, I got to take the measurements, you know, of my award paper. He says, I want to frame that thing. So he's going to go make a frame and put it in his den.
About that.
So he's just as tickled as they are.
Yeah.
So it really turned out to be quite an evening. I couldn't have stood it much more if there was any more going on. We didn't leave there until 10 o'clock. And when we got home, Johnny still wasn't home. And he didn't come in until nearly 11.
And you left early.
We left, right after I called you, whatever time that was. Because, I had to go over and set up the tables and set everything up for them, the decorations and things.
And then Johnny came with all this good news.
Yeah, and then we sat and talked until about 12:30, I guess, last night, 1 o'clock, about what happened at the market, you know. Oh, gosh, I wanted to be there so bad. The more he talked, the more I dreaded not being there. But I couldn't be in both places at the same time. So,
well, that was worth it. That was worth all of it.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know which way to go. I wanted to go to the market, and I wanted to go to Hawthorne. So I didn't.
Well, you can read about it now.
Yeah. It's not like being there. I wanted to see those animals, you know.
Shirley, you run out of hay, and you fill your barns.
Yeah, and then have to buy some.
I wouldn't build any more over there. I'd just cut down on some of the cows that don't produce as well as the others.
Well, I sold them all down to, sold over 100 head last year.
Yes.
In order to cut down so that we wouldn't, you know, have enough hay to keep going around.
Yeah.
But you're making money at the calves, so you're really hurting. I wish now I hadn't sold them. If I could have saved enough hay, I wouldn't have sold them.
Oh.
But, gee whiz, a calf, six, 7 months bring you a couple hundred dollars. That's almost the price of the cow, you know, that you'd have. But
as long as his price holds.
I don't know what to think about the prices.
Yeah.
You don't know whether they're going to stay this way, go up or go down.
I don't see how they can go down.
Everything is up.
It's just going just like that.
Everything is going up, the Berman's paycheck. And that's some reason or another shrinks every time we get a hold of it. It doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
If he doesn't soon kill me some beef to put in the freezer, I can't go this meat price. We're turning to vegetarians over there.
Well,
and even the vegetables are so high, you might as well buy the meat.
It's so much trouble to all this trouble you go to with these animals, you could put up, you could keep up some beef, some steers for beef, but that's not much fun.
No, I can't hardly eat what we kill.
No.
I can't think about it. You know, if I don't see it for a while, take it off somewhere and let somebody else feed it for a while, and I can probably eat it. But
But
I'll tell you, it's getting mighty tempting to go out there and look at them cows and then look at the price of a steak that you buy at the store. It's mighty tempting. I feel like myself going out there with a gun and killing one to butcher.
Well, I paid 90 cents for two cabbages the other day.
Isn't that terrible? And
we could do something about that, couldn't we?
Well, I don't know. You can't get any insecticides to spray your garden with anymore without going through such a rigmarole that it's not worth it. You certainly can't make a garden without spraying. The bugs eat it up. So I don't know what to think about this. Freddie had an awful time trying to get some seeds that was treated so that he could put them in the ground and the rats wouldn't dig them up and eat them. That was the watermelon seeds.
Oh, really?
He had an awful time. He went all over the place to try to find some of these seeds. He finally found some, but he had to get an okay here and an okay there, and then he had to go back and wait in line again. And
for seeds that were poisoned.
For the watermelons. You see, if you don't use them that's coated with a little bit of this poison, then the rats gets in there, and they just go right on down the road and eat up all the seeds.
Yeah. Don't you know,
it's
like
disgusting.
They used to do that to the corn seed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why they still do it now.
I got some that has got some on it, but this is an old package. I don't know whether you can buy it this year or not.
Yeah.
There's been so many restrictions. I doubt it, because the birds will go behind you and pick up every seed you put in the ground if it's not treated. If it's treated, they don't bother them.
Oh, really?
So, I don't know.
I had that old corn. I had 20 acres of corn there, and I had some left over. And you know, it's still lying around here, and it's still poisoned. And that's the trouble. That's what causes the restrictions, is handling it like that. And I still got it out there. And that's been 4, 5, 6 years ago. Isn't that awful? Well, it's out there in a drum, and anything won't bother there unless I get it out, and then I might get a hold of it.
Mm-hmm.
No telling why.
You suppose the, poisoning of some sort to keep the rats away from it, or is it?
The crows.
Yeah.
And all.
Is it a pink powder?
Blue. I forget what they call it, but they soak it in that, or do something. I think you.
Some of it leaves strength.
Powder you can put on it.
Uh huh.
I'm not sure, but I think that's the only corn I ever raised out here, and I forget.
Some of it loses its strength.
Shirley, did you come out on that on your insurance?
Oh, yes. They estimated $333 worth of damage up under the car.
Yeah.
But Berman, I think he spent so far about $60 on it.
Yeah.
And then he did his own labor.
Uh-huh.
and he's got it in top shape, except for a rubber that had gone bad before the accident, and they knew that. I mean, Berman told him that, so he has to replace that on his own. It's a rubber. Bob Berman calls it a rubber bumper. It goes somewhere between the spring and the shocks in the back left tire, up near the axle. And when you hit a bump, it hits that, the spring hits that rubber, and it bounces up. You see, and you don't feel anything. But now, since the rubber's gone bad, it busted. So he took it out of there to get another one to reorder to put it in there. He's got an order, and he can't find one in Gainesville. So he's got to put another one in there. But he took it out to get the size of it and everything. And last night when we went to that to Hawthorne, especially going up our laneway, you know, it would bounce down and hit that thing, and oh, it just knocked your eyes teeth out, you know, up and down, up and down. Every time you hit a bump, it hit solid right on that axle.
Yeah.
I was so worried about that thing all the way to Hawthorne. Well, it didn't do so bad on the hard road, we had, let's see, there was seven of us, and Faye, Cindy, Tina, and Vaughn. There's four others in the car besides the seven of us. So that was quite a load, and it just made that thing hit all the more, you see, right close down to the axle. The weight that was in the car just made it lean on the axle. So he's going to order that piece and put it in. He didn't think it'd cost the whole thing. Cost him if he put new shocks, new springs, and a new bumper in there. He didn't think it'd cost him over $30 and him do the labor.
Yeah.
So figure $100 damage. We still came up $233 to do it.
Because he did the labor.
Mm.
Yeah, well, now that's the advantage of knowing a little bit about it, isn't it?
So
even if he hired it done and knows what it is, he can still do a whole lot better, can't he?
There was a little dent in the back rear fender over the tire, and he took his foot and kicked it out, and you can't even tell it was there.
Yeah.
And they took off $55 for that little dent.
Well, now. But you didn't have the thing I was worried about. I was the police people always give people so much trouble.
Well, I guess they do if it's in the if you're in the wrong. Boy, he gave that boy a stiff talking to. I know that. Well, he could have caused an awful wreck there. We could have all been killed if I'd have hit those pine trees, or if we'd have hit head on. But he gave him an awful shaking.
Oh, did he?
He really scared that kid. And he should have.
Yeah.
But it's just like coming around this corner down here. Well, it's worse, because you see, that's a 90-degree corner. You can't see anything that's coming around that corner. You get this way, and you're halfway.
Where that is.
You're halfway around that curve before you could see anything coming at you. And he was halfway around, so we were right in the middle of the curve.
Yeah.
And it's a 90-degree curve. Well, he was coming from Gainesville, and he crossed over the railroad track, and he just hung to the side of that curve, you see, on my side of the road, because he's coming from that direction. But I was coming on my side of the curve, and I was going this way, but I would have swerved out this way to go to the hard road, you see, provided nobody was coming, that is, from off the Gainesville, from toward Gainesville and over the railroad track. And the next day, I went to Hawthorne. Or a day or two later, I went to Hawthorne, and right there, within a seeing distance from where I almost had our wreck, two colored ladies had hit a train just minutes before I got there. And I got out and went over to see what I could do. I had to walk down the track, you know, run around the track and run around the train, because she hit him from the other side, and I was going to go across the track. So I got out and ran around there, and I didn't think they were going to make it, especially the one that was driving. She must have weighed 350 pounds. I thought I was big, but she was bigger. And she was just all cut up. I didn't think she would make it.
You're not big, you're just strong.
No, I'm big. So they took her on to the hospital. I thought she'd never make it. As far as I know, she's still alive. But that other gal got a hold of my hand and she wouldn't turn loose for nothing. Oh, I've never seen such strength in a person that's, you know,
just scared.
Hurt. Oh, she was scared. And they skid 260 feet.
Something ought to be done with that time.
They need to clean out some more there. Although she had her windows up, the radio was playing, and she looked one way, and by the time she looked around to the other way, the engine was going by.
Yeah.
And she skid.
Yeah.
And she had time while she was skidding. You see, the engine went on by, and she hit, and the first car went on by, and she hit the second car behind the engine.
Oh.
And by the time she skidded up to the train, the wheel of the train just caught her so, and it turned her car this way.
Yeah.
And it caught the driver pretty bad, but the girl on the outside didn't get hurt so bad.
Yeah.
Maybe on the outside. But it demolished one side of the car. The other side didn't even touch it.
Yeah. And that's something.
So, they were lucky. If she'd have hit that train... In between the two wheels.
Yeah.
The wheel is what saved her.
That,
she hit that wheel.
Save that. I understood Marvin to say, I don't know. I understood him to say he came along after. He was following you.
Yeah.
And he came along over there in time before you got off.
You might have.
Oh, you got,
Before I left, he was there. I didn't see him.
Yeah.
Huh.
I understood him say that.
Well, I left his place just before it happened. See, I had stopped at their place, and I was talking to them before I went on to Hawthorne.
Yeah.
And I was late getting to Hawthorne, so I was supposed to have been there 1:50, and it was nearly 1 o'clock then.
Yeah.
But I had called the school and told them I was going to be a little late.
Yeah.
So, I wasn't really traveling all that fast, but when I got to the train, it had happened just minutes before I got there, just a couple minutes before I got there.
Let me tell you, Shirley, you was talking to me, where was it, on the telephone, about this boy over there, what's the boy's name?
Virgil,
I never saw him. Now, he comes up there and just visits with you.
Man, I don't know. I wish he'd get a job or do something. It's interesting to hear him talk, you know, but I just don't have that much time to sit 2 hours every day. I just can't do it. So I'll tell him, you know, when he's there, well, tomorrow I got so-and-so to do, and tomorrow I got so-and-so, the next day I got so-and-so to do. So now I've got him where he comes maybe once or twice a week, which isn't bad. I enjoy talking with him that way. But when I've got so much to do, I can't sit down and really enjoy talking with him.
But he is a pretty innocent fellow.
Yeah, he's he knows quite a bit about the outdoors and fishing. You see, that's all he's ever done is fish. He's got a lot of his daddy's ideas, which kind of mixes them up. But he seems to be
George.
Yeah, he's. Old George, he's got crazy thoughts every now and then, and I think Virgil's probably picking up a lot from him, listening to him quite a lot.
I don't know,
he just gets crazy ideas about things, the way they should be done. Sometimes I want to laugh at him, but I don't dare.
You mean?
A lot of times I can't understand him, you know, how he talks. He can't hardly, he's tongue-tied, and you can't hardly understand what he says.
Yeah.
But Virgil's not that way. But Debbie come over that day, and I thought to my soul, he was really interested in Debbie.
Yeah.
And it was my fault. I got so busy with what I was doing, making these little place settings for the kids, you know, over there for the banquet last night.
Yeah.
And I was painting them. When she said she'd be over in 15 minutes, she said on the phone, and right after I hung up, Virgil drove up. And Tommy was home from school, or one of the kids was home from school, so he went back to the bedroom back there to play pool with them. They got a pool table back there.
Yeah.
So he was back there playing pool, and I was painting these things, and Debbie said she would be there in 15 minutes. Well, I figured, 15 minutes I can have these things done, and they'll be drying while we go put the cows in the run.
Yeah.
because they were oil paint and they had to be set outside to dry. So that's what I was doing, but it took me longer than I thought. And she got there quicker than I thought, and Virgil came just before she came up, so that was an interruption. So they were playing pool, a couple of games of pool, while I finished painting my little men.
Well, I would tell you, anybody like that, you'd think, like Virgil, he can play pool, he can shoot the guns. And
oh, yeah.
Fish.
He's quite a sportsman.
You'd think anybody like to talk to him.
Yeah. He's, I think he's a little egotistical. He brags on himself a lot.
Well, that's all right.
But he is. He's a crack shot. I went out shooting there one day with him.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. And just for, you know, target practicing. I couldn't shoot a thing if I had to, I don't think, anymore. I killed an armadillo here some years ago, and I ever since then I don't kill very many things. But unless it's a snake or something. But he's quite a crack shot with a gun. And he goes out all hours during the night, coon hunting. He loves to go coon hunting. And fishing.
He got them coon dogs?
No, he just goes out with a gun. Coon hunt. And you can hear him shooting every now and then through the night, you know, hours through the night.
Oh, I didn't
know. But,
Charlie, let me tell you. I don't guess you've got all day. Let me get Rick in here. I want you to talk for a minute. Hey, Rick. Come on in a minute, Shirley. Miss Dodd's going out the door in a minute. Let me tell you, Shirley, Debbie is upstairs typing.
She is.
Let me get her down here.
Oh, that's all right. Don't bother her, because I don't...
Well, she's going to visit with you.
Well...
Though. Yeah, she will.
Why don't you look for... Huh?
No, I haven't. I was going to. I'm the only one that has to go and yells, and I've got some sandwiches over there.
Oh, no. I got plenty of dinner fixed. I thought maybe I'd get Mr. Miles to ride back over there with us since you were taking off for the day. You think he'd go?
I don't know. I might.
Thought I'd take him over and then bring him back a little bit later. We'll see the bulls.
Yeah, well, I've got these sandwiches.
Well,
you recognize this character? You recognize
right.
That one. Come on over here.
Hi, Tommy.
You recognize
Hi,
this character?
Hi, how are you?
Well, I didn't bring Virgil with me.
Well, why didn't you ring him?
That's what I don't know.
If he knew I was over here, he'd kill me.
Yeah.
He wanted to come over next time I came.
And come on. Yeah, go on, leave him.
Well, I was glad to see his truck wasn't in the laneway, so I slipped right on by.
He goes out hunting at night. Coon hunting.
Yeah.
You said he could shoot.
Yeah, he's a crack shot with that gun. I don't know, I told Mr. Miles, I think he's a little egotistical, you know, he brags on himself all the time. I can't go there.
Well, let me tell you, I don't know anybody like that.
Well, I don't either, he's one of a kind.
Who gets out like that and does all them things.
He's one of a, well, I don't know many that would walk these woods at night, and he hears panthers, you know, you can go out there and hear the panthers screaming. And,
yeah.
And I mean, he goes into the wilderness, he doesn't just go across the yard. At night, I wouldn't even go to feed. I wouldn't even go down to the cow to milk if I had to at night.
Is that right?
Not without a flashlight and all the light I can get.
You mean you don't have a flashlight?
Oh, he goes with a flashlight, yeah. He has to shine the light, you see, up in the trees to get the eyes of the coon and he shoots them out of the tree.
Oh, my gosh.
But he gets some of the biggest ones you ever saw.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they tell me there's more, the coons, there's the bigger coon population I've never been.
That's right.
And they don't have the natural enemies, you know, they don't hunt them much and all like that.
Well, you see, he's trying to get as many as he can now because when these melons come up, they put poison eggs out to kill the coons so they won't eat the melons.
Yeah.
We had to do that last year, so he's killing as many as he can now.
Ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. Mm. See, he sells them to the colored folks that come out there to buy fish.
Oh, does he?
Oh.
And then he...
Well, what do you know?
Then he catches bream and specks on the side, and he sells them to the colored folks that come out there and buy them. See, you're not supposed to sell any scaled fish.
Yeah.
But he does on the side.
Well, he can go out and catch them a little bit.
Yeah,
enough.
Yeah.
He don't catch them in the net.
No, he catches it for the fun of it, you know. He'll load a boat in no time. I never saw such. I told him, I said, when I go fishing, I want you to go with me. That guy, I think he smells them, and he can see them down there in the water, you know. I can smell them, but I
can't
see them.
Well, let me tell you, Shirley, Ms., I don't know Marlowe. I never saw him.
Oh, now, he is one of Virgil's buddies. I mean, he knows all about Marlowe.
Yeah.
He really... He's a king to Virgil.
I saw Clarinelle one time sitting over there at the table with Miss Mary, and I took a liking to her. Well, I saw her twice, but that's the only time I ever spoke to her. And that's what they say about Marlowe, you see.
Oh, he was colorful, I mean, as far as the outdoors type.
He was a fine fisherman.
Mm.
And he was back in Tom Glisson's time, you see.
Mm-hmm.
He fished for them.
I understand he's married to a woman that has 5 children now.
I haven't heard.
So he's got a whole bunch of little ones. But he's living in somewhere in Georgia, in one of the big swamps where he was out gator hunting.
Oh.
But, He learned to live and hunt and fish and shoot gators there in the Okanoke swamps.
Yeah.
And Okefenokee, whatever it is, and down around the Everglades. They say that he can call a gator from miles.
Oh,
you know, just sound like a mating gator, and he'd just call them from miles. They just come to him. He doesn't go out looking for them. He just calls them up to him.
Oh, I'm done. Yeah. Like they used to call.
They had him up there several times for killing gators out of season.
Yeah.
Because everyone that wanted skins would go to him for the skins, and the price got too tempting, so he'd go out and call them up and get them some gators.
Is that right?
And they absolutely hounded that man because he was so slick. Because he could call these gators up so easy, you know, without having to go out with a light or anything. He'd just call them up and there they are. And it was hard to track him down.
Shirley, I must admit, I never heard of calling up gators.
Oh, I've heard of that since I was this high. But I never would believe it, not the way he does it, you know.
Yeah.
And Virgil can tell you what he did.
He's
yeah.
You reckon Virgil can call him up?
I think he can. I think he won't admit it, but I think he can. Or at least he partially admitted it. Kind of tricked him into it.
Gee whiz, I'm sort of tempted to put on my miniskirt and go over there and see if I can go hunting with it or something.
See what you're missing, David?
I don't know anybody like that.
Oh, he's something.
Sure hate to leave.
Okay, don't.
Well,
worry.
Give
I'm
us
sorry
a little
I
something that you want.
Well, Debbie knows where it is, and she can get some coffee.
Well, what? No, we just.
You already said, Shirley.
No.
Now you can stay on the
We got to get back now.
Sorry, babe, there's some cookies there, too.
Yeah.
I had dinner. We ought to go up to the house and have dinner. I got potato salad and baked chicken and baked beans and everything else
from
last night.
I'm perfectly willing. I'd love to go somewhere. I just get tired of staying in my own premises.
I tell you, we came back with half of what I took over there. There's so much food.
Oh, did you?
Boy. But,
Let me tell you, wait a minute now, let me see. Debbie said he told her that he'd learned to play pool from an expert.
He said Mr.
professional.
May.
Yeah,
somebody here at the creek?
He used to live here, but he's gone now. He retired there at the creek. He lived there in a trailer for a while, but I think he got homesick or something. He's back home. Where home is, I don't remember. I don't know where Tommy is.
Did you know
Tommy's?
Him?
Probably just right out there where we were.
Oh. Pardon me?
Did you know him?
Mr. Mays?
Uh-huh.
A time or two I ran into him. He was, I guess it's been 2-3 years ago since he moved.
Yeah.
And I met him over at Bill and Doc's fish camp. He was a fisherman too. He'd go out and fish.
Yeah.
And I'd take her some eggs and milk over there once in a while, and I ran into him over there. He wanted a jar of milk one time, and I took him a jar of milk. That's the only, I never had, you know, much to say to him.
Uh-huh.
He was a bachelor, lived by himself. So, but that's all he had to do was go around shoot pool and
well,
enjoy himself.
You've never been right in with this Cross Creek fishing gang, exactly, but you've been on the edge of it, haven't you? You've seen it through Virgil, and did you know Marlo at all?
Oh, yes. I didn't care much about him, though. I mean, to be honest with you, I didn't, to be frankly honest, I didn't trust him. I just didn't trust him. He was one of these shifty-looking fellas, and he was shifty acting, and I didn't want much to do with him. Matter of fact, we came up from in the yard one night about almost 1 o'clock. We'd been out to a movie with the kids. We went to see Song of the South, Walt Disney's Song of the South. When we got back, we took them out for a snack afterwards, after the movie, so it was quite late. And now, whether he thought we were gone for the evening or what, I don't know. But when we came back, he was just backing out of our driveway from the house. And we drove up on him. And Berman got out and he said, what you want? And Marlo says, well, he says, I heard somebody screaming over here. So I thought he'd come over and check it out. Berman says, I don't hear anybody screaming. And about that time, two shady looking characters came out of the woods, you know, where those 40 acres of oaks is over there. They came from that direction, but Berman said that he thought they came from the shop over there. And they did. One of them had grease all over his hands. Now, what he was doing, I don't know, what they could have been doing. And Berman had a motor over there, a car motor. It had been pulled out of the car, and he was working on it, or out of the truck. We were in the car. And he was working on it, but now whether they were trying to lift that motor or just what they were trying to do, we don't know. But they all acted peculiar, and when they walked up, they acted as if they knew Marlo, and Marlo tried to act as if he didn't know them. Yet he let them get in the car, and he took them off down the road when they left. If I didn't know anybody like that, especially those shady-looking boys, I wouldn't have let them in the car, and I wouldn't have taken them off without first asking who they were and where they were going. He didn't ask them. They just got in the car, and they took off. So I think that they were all together and up to something. I always did believe that. So after that, I didn't have much to do with Marlo.
He was always
on the other side of the law, you know, he was always doing something crooked. And Berman didn't want to have anything to do with him because he didn't want to get involved in any way with him. So,
well,
that's why I guess we didn't know him any better than we did. But everybody that does know him knows that he is like this.
Yeah.
And, they go along with him. I mean, they go along with this tossing gators, against the law. And
yes.
Things like this.
That's the people. Yeah,
I wasn't about to turn him in. I don't know whether he thought we would or not, but more he gets out there, the better I liked it because I don't care for him either.
Yeah.
So.
Well, now you see. All I know about Clannell is what Miss Mary told me, and I don't imagine she ever bothers to, she never takes great pains just to give it to you right straight, but I never saw any reason why she'd leave Marlo, so she must have had some grounds
Well, they were a wild bunch. They drank quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
And Clarinello drank her share.
She did, too.
And Marlowe was pretty disgusted with her when she do this. But
oh.
Then he drank his part, so they had brawls and arguments out there on the lawn and shooting affairs and this reason like this, I didn't care much about going over and having any conversation with them. I just stayed away from them. But they were known for, you know, their roughness and causing trouble.
See, they never passed her.
Now he was all right as far as staying to himself and not causing. He was more or less on the quiet side. Clarinell was the one that always caused a lot of the commotion. And I think they.
Well, what happens?
And I don't know. I've heard reports that they weren't married. Then I heard another report that they got divorced. So I don't know. But she was up and gone before.
Yeah.
Do you remember when
Clarinell was about to leave him that time? I was over there the day that Miss Mary went in to see us and bought a whole new bed, the mattress and everything, and $99.99 that she paid for it. And for Clarinell, she figured she was going to take up over there, you see. And that didn't last any time. And she just had her extra bed, I guess. Clarinell just went on. I never seen her, heard of her since then, you know.
Well, I don't think anyone could get along with Clarinell. I wouldn't have anybody in the house that drank like she did, that drank, period, like a fish. And then she'd smoke, and anybody could get drunk like that and burn the house down before you know it. I wouldn't have her stay with me, I know that. And I know that's what bothered Mrs. Guthrie. Because she can't stand that either.
Oh.
So she probably end up throwing her out. Clarinell would still be there, I think.
Oh, really?
If it was up to Clarinell.
Well, I thought it was Clarinell that had taken off.
I don't think so.
Well, that's too bad, isn't it?
I never did.
Well, she was right nice person, you know, just to see her there at the supper table. And from what they say, Marlowe was gifted in all these things. He's the best. I heard Miss Dyson say he's the best fisherman she ever had.
That's right. Everybody gives him that. They say that he just can't be beat.
Yeah.
And he taught the boat knights a lot about what they know about fishing and hunting. I think he taught Virgil. He'd take Virgil out in the woods when Virgil was just a little kid.
Yeah.
And so what Virgil really knows, I think he learned from Marlowe.
Well, what do you know? And now he's gone off. Well, he could come back any time.
Well, his eyes are getting bad. He won't never be as well in the woods as he has been.
Marlowe?
But now I think Virgil's about as good as Marlowe ever was. As far as, you know, hunting or...
Is that right?
Shooting or fishing.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Virgil's pretty good. John Henry, he's not much of a sportsman. He doesn't go out like Virgil does, but he does, he loves his fishing. He sticks with that. He must to do it 7 days a week. I don't know how in the world a man can bake those boxes and go out and catch catfish 7 days a week and clean them. And enjoy it and smile while he's doing it.
He does that too.
And never put on a shoe. He must.
No, and bear down to his belt.
Yeah.
In the wintertime. He goes out there on that freezing lake, you know, to pick up those bait boxes. And sometimes he just has a little shirt on in that wind, just a whipping cold out there. You'd think, well, he'd freeze.
Yeah.
Don't bother me. Don't bother me.
Yeah. Let me tell you, I don't know about these young ladies and people like that, but you call me sometime, Virgil's over there.
What do you think of Virgil?
Oh, Virgil's real nice.
Well, he thought you was real nice.
Why not?
Oh, goodness. Oh, goodness. You can't fill him up.
Oh, you can eat?
Does he eat up there with you a lot?
I thought I would die. Reverend and I went to the movie. We got Virgil to babysit for us.
Babysit?
Yeah.
No,
well,
kidding.
You know, give him something to do. Give, you know, to keep them from fighting with one another.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd make everybody happy and let him babysit. Well, I had ham for supper, you know, sliced it, instead of baking, and I just sliced it up and fried most of it, because Berman wanted ham and eggs for supper, so I gave him ham and eggs and some hash browns for supper, and Virgil says, gee, that smells good. I said, well, come and have you some ham and eggs and some hash browns. So I, don't you ever tell him I said this, none. So I just piled a platter, not a plate, but a platter, and I just set it down in front of him. You might as well, because if you put the platter in the front, in the middle of the table, he'll take it anyway. So I gave him the platter, and I had these pieces of ham was, I bet you, well, I couldn't get but one piece in the frying pan at one time. It's a medium-sized frying pan. So I had two frying pans going. Well, this ham was at least that big around and about that thick. And I
say
had
that again, Charlie.
It was at least that big around and
medium
about
size
that thick.
Frying pan.
Yeah. And you couldn't get two pieces. If you cut it in little strips, you couldn't have got another piece in that frying pan. That's how big the piece of meat is. All right, I had about six or eight slices on that platter. Well, I'd given Berman a couple of pieces, and I think Johnny was eating, and I gave him a slice, and the rest was left on the platter, and I had scrambled at least two dozen eggs. Well, Johnny and Berman got their share.
Oh, they helped themselves first.
Yeah. I always fix their plates for them.
Yeah.
But I don't bother to fix Virgil's. I just give them the platter.
What's left?
Here's what's left.
What's left.
So I just left the rest of the eggs on the platter. And I figured, well, I didn't imagine that he'd eat them all, you know. I figured, well, I'd fill them up on eggs. I had and hash browns. I had a pile of hash browns on there. So I just passed him that. Well, he ate and he ate and he ate and he was still eating when Berman and Johnny got through. And he ate and he ate. And I had cake, a chocolate cake there. When he got through, he had cake and some more coffee. And I thought, well, gee, you know, maybe I should fix something else. He was still eating and he was still going to town. So I thought, well, we had to leave pretty quick because it was getting late. We were going out to a movie and we were leaving him to babysit. So. Well, when everything was gone, I said, Virgil, did you have enough supper? He says, yeah, I believe it did. So I cleaned the table off, put everything away, and we went on to the movie. We came back, it was about 11 o'clock that night, and Virgil got up and he said, well, he said, I had a very good time with the kids, and he said, call me if you need me anymore, and he went on home. Johnny came in, he says, I don't believe it, I can't believe it. I said, what can't you believe, Johnny? What you doing, Tommy?
Daddy.
We'll go for a walk. To look at the cows across the fence. So he says, Johnny says, I just can't believe it. I said, Johnny, what can't you believe? He said, you know, Virgil went back in that ice box after you left and he ate two more pieces of ham. I said, he didn't eat that ham that was in the ice box. And he said, yes, he did. Well, I'd left. There was about three or four slices of that ham that was left, you know, raw. It wasn't cooked. In the crisper, and he pulled it out of there and made a sandwich. Johnny said he made a double-decker sandwich with lettuce, tomato, and this ham on there. Well, it wasn't cooked. Lordy mercy, I was scared to death he's going to die that night. He told Johnny he had a stomachache when he left. I said, Johnny, why didn't you tell him it wasn't cooked? He said, I didn't know. I said, did you eat any of it? He said, heck no. He says, I couldn't eat after I finished all that supper. But he says, you wasn't gone 10 minutes, and he was in there making him a sandwich. And there was a bag of potato chips on. He might have had a stomach ache from eating too much. I don't know. Maybe the pork didn't agree with him, but maybe.
Oh, that's funny.
I never saw anything like it. Well, I don't think he'd eaten for a week. He hasn't done that since.
He doesn't sound like any slim figure of a man.
Well, He's not.
He hasn't done that
since. He's as wide as he is tall, isn't he?
About.
Oh, you mean he's pretty good size fella?
Well, he's muscular built, but he's got a wind bag, for a belly. He's almost bad as I am. I tell you, well, George.
Shirley, you're not fat. You're not big. You're just solid.
Oh my! I used to be solid, but Virgil and Mr. Booknight are in an eating contest. I think they both try to outdo the other. You can get the heaviest. When we first came down here, you wouldn't believe it, but that Virgil was a nice looking fella. He was slim and trim, and boy, he looked like Rock Hudson. I'll tell you, he was really a nice looking boy. Faye's got pictures, his sister's got pictures of him. And you wouldn't believe it's the same person. You know, when he first got out of service in his uniform, oh, he was really attractive looking.
Yeah.
Real nice looking.
And he kept that up after you got out here.
Yeah, we were here.
What service was he in? The Korean War?
I don't know. It must have been.
He's not old enough for the World War II.
No, wait a minute. No. It must have been the Korean War.
That'd be in the middle 50s.
Mm. But he graduated in 56, I think, from school. So I think he's 33 or 34.
40. Yeah.
33 or 34. Because he's just a little older than Faye, and I think Faye is 30. Or 31. He's either 33 or 34. Somewhere around there.
somewhere along the line, he got shaggy.
Well, in the last 8 years, I don't know. Some say he was dating a girl. If he knew I was telling you all this, he'd kill me. He was dating a girl back at the time when we first moved down here.
Yeah.
About 10 years ago. And he dated her for 2-3 years, I guess. And he was very serious about her. But
yeah.
He didn't know how serious he was until she met somebody else. Uh-huh. And she started going with somebody else. And then she got serious about this other fella. So there was a triangle there. So eventually Virgil was left out. She told him not to bother to come around anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So
nice.
He went kind of berserk, I think, from the way everybody talks about it. He really thought a lot of her. And he didn't want anything to do with people. He got very withdrawn. That's why I say I feel kind of sorry for him now, because he feels like now I think he's going to get over it. He's going to live over it, but he still talks about it. Well, he talks about her to me, but he won't talk about her to anybody else.
Yeah.
But I keep picking at him,
yeah,
asking him questions. And finally I found out all of this information nobody else knows about.
Yeah.
But you all. Bring the word. But he said she's married. He thinks she's married now. She's been dating this fella for years, and he has lost contact with her. And I said, well, Virgil, you got just what you deserve. I said, if you wanted her bad enough, you'd have got up there and fight for her.
Yes.
I said, I had to fight for mine for 3 years, and I finally landed him.
Yeah.
So she says, if she thought as much of me as I did of her, I wouldn't have had to fight for her. I said, yeah, all you men think the same way. So that's all there was said about her. But he'll go to bed. Up to this past year, up till hunting season, he'd go to bed and he'd sleep all day and all night. He'd get up and come to the breakfast table and eat and go back to bed. Wouldn't even take a shower. And his beard grew down to here. Just a hermit, you know, just lived in the back bedroom back there in his mother's place. He wouldn't do a lick of work. He wouldn't see anybody. He wouldn't talk to anybody. His mother couldn't even talk to him. And he was that way for a year.
Oh, you mean he wouldn't even talk?
He wouldn't talk to no one.
Hmm.
No one.
Just slept.
Yeah. And they thought for a long time he might have been on dope or something, you know, because nobody could go to bed and sleep that way. Unless you just feel like you're half dead inside, you know, unless you just feel like there's no use. I felt that way many days, but if it wasn't for my five kids, I guess I'd be in bed. Just try to sleep my life away, but that's what he did. He just hibernated like a bear. He just came out long enough to eat something to sustain him and go back to bed. It's a wonder to me that he didn't lose weight then. But I think he was eating enough and sleeping enough that it just grew to fat, you see. And that's why he got as heavy as he did.
Oh,
didn't
yeah.
get out and exercise. He wouldn't go to the mailbox. He wouldn't go to the store. I told Mrs. Boatin one time, I said, "Where's Virgil?" And she says, "Well, he's back there sleeping." I said, "You know what I'd do, don't you?" And she said, "No." I said, "I'd cut his groceries out. By golly, when he got hungry enough, he'd get out and shoot him a bear or something. Shoot him something to eat. Or go to the grocery store and buy it." I said, "At least it'd get him out of bed long enough to go get some groceries." But she said, "No, I can't do him that way." So I blame her as much as I do.
She went along with him.
Oh, yeah. She saw that he was sad. Tried to talk to him and tried again. She figured, well, every day he'd come out of it, but he just got worse and worse. So that's why I've been sort of spending a little more time with him this year, trying to keep him from sliding back into those old habits, you see.
Yeah.
When hunting season comes, that's the only thing to get him out of the bed. Now, he'd get out during hunting season, and for years after hunting season closed, he'd go right back to bed.
That's the way he's been doing.
Uh-huh.
But you don't think maybe he'll do it this year?
Well, hunting season has been closed a long time, and I've been, you know, sort of taking an interest, you know, trying to get him interested in something. And I'd ask him once in a while to take the kids fishing. Now he enjoys that, and he comes down and he'll ask me if he can have the kids long enough to go fishing for a couple hours.
Oh, don't tell me.
Yeah, he'll take all five of the kids out down there at the hole, down to the water hole, fish with them all day. That's where we got all those fish for that fish fry we had here not long ago. Because they went down there and they fish and they fish and they fish. And he comes to get Johnny and he gets along with the kids just like he's one of them.
Well, I'm damn.
And Tommy, any of them is home. If he knew Tommy was home today, he'd been back there playing pool. And I wouldn't be sitting here. But that's it. He comes in and he'll... And if nobody's there, he'll sit down and he'll have a cup of coffee with me, and then I try to spend a little time with him to keep him from, you know, getting too depressed. And if he gets depressed, he'll go right back to bed.
Oh, can you tell when he's sort of...
I think I can do more with him than any of his people can.
Yeah.
Because he'll sit there and he'll try to get in the conversation about being in the service or something he's enjoyed doing years ago, or girl, yeah, but he won't open up to everybody.
Well, what did he do in the service?
You know, he's told me time to get, it goes in one ear and out the other. I'm ashamed of that, but a lot of times it's boring to hear him talk all the time, and I don't really catch on to a lot, but you know, the everyday run of the mill, I guess.
Well,
he was in Greenland for a while, I think it was, or some cold country, and he really talks about that quite a lot, about how cold it was.
You know, a lot of fellas do interesting things in the service. You just hate to hear them talk.
Yeah. Well, it got that way after a while with Virgil because, you know, you get every day 2 hours there for a while. I couldn't find enough to talk about, to tell you the truth. Try to keep him interested.
Well, it looks to me like you don't
but
have
I,
to.
I'd go on a lot, and I'd peel potatoes or fix dinner or something, and a lot of times I got my mind on what I'm doing or what I should be doing, and he's going on and on and on. You see. I feel sorry for him. I sure do. And
well, I don't. All the things he can do.
But I mean, you've got to have an interest. You got to have a heart in what you're doing and really
if I could hunt and fish like he does, I
but
sure
he's done it so often that it's really nothing to him. You see, he likes to do it, and he'd like to find somebody, you know, like Rick or Johnny or somebody to go out hunting with him and really shows off, you know, when he is hunting with someone. He really takes you on a tour if you're going hunting with him, from what I understand. Donnie's
Lord
gone.
Almighty. I wish I was at D. Bridges again. I'd sure take him on. I just love. You see, when I was young, I didn't have enough sense to run around with people who had any experience, you know.
Well, he's the very one to have in the, you know, to go camping or something like this with in the woods, because there's so much he knows that he could teach, you know, younger kids.
I remember old Buck Jones. He a young fella. He's a little older than I was, and he was a mechanic from way back, and he had one of them old tin sheds like they had, you know, then. His daddy was a mechanic, and that was when the automobiles first started. And he would wait till Saturday, and he'd take off for the river bottom, and he'd hunt, you see, and fish, and what he'd, and trap, and all those things. And I'd say, look at that old nasty fella going
yeah.
down there. Ain't that something?
But they learn the ways of the wild like that, and I don't know, it's just something that's in them. He talked about this girl. She used to like to go out hunting with him and fishing with him and things like this. And he really, you know, you can see tears come because he get so wrapped up in what he was.
Yeah.
So he must have been really crazy about her.
Well, let me tell you,
to let himself go the way he has.
He ought to get in with old Billy Hughes.
No, Billy wouldn't. Billy's a loner too. You get two guys like that. Virgil is all right when he's got somebody younger than he is or doesn't know, you know, too much about the woods. They get along pretty good.
Yeah.
But you get somebody like Billy. Billy's really not interested in what Virgil can do or what he can't do. And so Virgil's not,
oh, yeah.
He just doesn't have anything in common with Billy.
And they ought to have a great deal in common, oughtn't they?
They should.
Tell them a little about Billy Hughes. The last thing I remember you was telling, I heard you say was he would bring them cows up and hitch his horse and the cows would wait for him.
Yeah, well, he'd come over the fence, he'd come into the yard and he'd be talking to me and he'd leave the cows. He'd go all over the creation and get these cows up, and he'd walk them up the road. And then when he'd stop and come over and have a cup of coffee or conversation with me, you know, well, sounds like I do nothing but sit and talk all day.
I know you don't.
But anyhow, he came over there, and he only stops once in a blue moon because he's always on the go, or I am one. But if he sees me there in the yard, he'll come on over and then we have a cup of coffee, and we sit and chat for a while. And I said, well, Billy, don't you want to bring those cows in the yard here and keep them in the yard until you're ready to go? He said, no, they're not going to go anywhere. Here he'd been all miles now on the horse for hours, tracking down these cows and getting them all together so that he could take them on to market or move them to another field or something, you know, divide them or whatever he wanted to do with them. I said, Billy, they're going to get away. They'll go back down, and you have to spend all that time rounding them up again. He said, no, they'll be right there when I want them. Sure enough, he'd leave his dogs and his horse outside the... If those were my cows, they'd have been anywhere but where I wanted them, you know.
Yeah.
But his cows would just stand right there and not move a muscle.
Yeah.
Not move one hoof until he got back to that horse to take them off. Every one of them.
Anything.
They'd just stand there and wait for them. And then those old brainers haven't got a bit of sense. You can't teach them to tell them anything. You gotta push them, you know, with a horse or a dog or something. You gotta keep them on the move. But
the reason I'm wearing these
is
I've had squints. My eyes have had squints, and my eyes get to hurting. I don't know what it is. Maybe the sun's coming out. I mean, the weather's. The reason I'm not hiding behind them.
Oh,
I'm
see.
I see you.
They didn't give you a black eye.
No. But Billy Hughes, you see, doesn't have to worry about fencing and things. things like that. He just has cows, and
he turns them in the loose.
And lets them take care of themselves. And he don't even have to keep, he don't, what was that he said, Shirley? He didn't know how many he had?
Berman asked him how many cows he had.
Yeah.
And he looked at Berman real sharp, you know, and he said,
you see, that's
said,
the one thing you
many.
Don't ask people is how many they have, because that,
because he said, he looked at Berman and he said, well, I don't know how many I have, but he says, I know every one of them. So Berman took it, you know, that, well, maybe he thinks I'm going to go out there and butcher one of them, you know.
Oh. he can't butcher anymore. He's, people don't butcher them old bony animals. One time.
They do. They get them on them. And he doesn't know how many the cattle rustle. And I know I've seen trucks go back in there and other trucks follow up, you know, and I know what they're up to. But trying to catch them out is another thing, and you may get shot if you're out there trying to catch them.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't go out there. It's none of my business, I guess. But if I caught them getting a cow, I'd sure report them. I'd stop them one way or another.
He never catches them.
One guy came into our pasture with a truck one time. It was late at night. Berman and I just happened to be sitting in a room talking, and it was dark. We had the lights out. We were had the curtains open. We were sitting there next to the fireplace, and we saw this car drive into the pasture, or a truck drive into the pasture, and turn around and put his lights out. So we knew he was down there. So Berman got in the car, and he went down there to catch him. And this is what he did. He went down without his lights on. And he brought a cement block with him. And he went in the gate. And after he got into the gate, he took the block and he dropped it in the way of the gate. Then he turned his lights on and he went on through the gate. That guy saw him when he turned his lights on, so he turned his lights on. And he started out. He circled around, and Berman went to circle around after him. And when he did, he went to go through that gate and he hit that cement block. But he kept on going. But he had some damage under that truck. But he was up to no good. We don't know what, but anybody parks a truck in your pasture, you know they're going to do something. But you see, the truck was up a little bit too high. If it had been a car or a lighter weight truck, like a pickup, it would have hit that block and done a lot of damage. But this one was maybe a three-quarter truck, which made us think that they were going to take the cattle off, and it had a high bed on it.
Oh.
So I think that's what they were after. But he just kind of, he hit the block, and it kind of snapped up under the truck as he went out. And Berman tried to chase him, but he already had a good start on Berman, so, because he had to get out, you see, and move the block before he could go over it. And by the time he was doing that, he was already out onto the highway. So Berman went to the house, and he called the sheriff and told him that there was a three-quarter ton truck. He didn't know whether it went toward Cross Creek, went toward Hawthorne. If he just followed them down long enough to see where the taillights were, you know, going in one direction or the other. But then he couldn't have been sure. It was the right vehicle. So by the time he got all the information to the sheriff and they got out there, there was no hiding or hair of the truck.
Yeah. He called the sheriff to talk with.
But they were up to no good, I'm sure of that.
Charlotte, I don't know how you would get a hold of people like that. You could get the deputy out there.
Well, he didn't even think to get the license plate number.
Yeah.
I would have when he hit that.
He not much of a sleuth.
No. He couldn't get away with anything. He couldn't do anything wrong, I don't think. If he went to do something wrong, it'd turn out right. Honest John.
it just can't happen.
There's been a few times he's been so darn honest it hurts. You know, like the time he was raising bees and he had to even put that down on his income tax. I said, don't put that down there. How do they know whether we're raising bees or not, you know? Well, I made so much on the honey, I got a report. I said, why do you have to report it? You got cash for it. Honest Joe. Oh. If I sell a bale of hay and I get a dollar for it, they don't ever know that bale of hay was ever on the place.
Let me tell you, I'm saying this for them. But one of my real disappointments down here is that Dick Wilkerson had to pass on before I could get to him.
Yeah, now he was one of a kind.
Yeah.
He was
now, when I say get to him, all I mean is that I could just go talk to him, you see. He's a talk to.
Oh, yeah.
Anywhere you go, you'd run into him.
Yeah.
And he lived up there at, up the road.
Windsor.
And he died with his heart gave way. He had heart trouble when he was over there at Melon's at your place.
Yeah, and diabetes. He was a diabetic.
But I'm telling you, that was my first encounter with the crackers. And I didn't encounter him, but they did. They had, Berman had Melons with him over there. And it looked like for a while, Berman wondered, all he gonna get out of it was just his experience. And I never knew exactly what happened, but all I could see was Shirley kept sort of in keeping a hand in there. He wanted just buy the whole thing, didn't he?
Yeah. By George, when he started something, I was about determined to see Berman finish it.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to let him throw it up. You see, he wanted to throw it, just sell out the whole. Mr. Wilkerson kept after him, and he wanted to buy the whole lot.
You see, down south, the Melons had failed.
Right, and it brought these up here to a higher price.
Aye. Oh, yeah, and you had a big crop.
Yeah. So what he wanted to do was to buy us all out and then sell and make a killing.
Yeah.
Mm. But he, if he could hold them, you see, you have to estimate your time in about 3 months after you put your money and time and labor in it. Then these wise guys come around, they try to buy the buy up the melon patch if they think they're going to make a profit on it, which
yeah.
they do. If we'd have sold to him for $4,000, he'd turn around and made $12,000.
Yeah.
See the profit he would have made.
Yeah.
So I told Berman wanted to do it because he was afraid that we'd have a storm or have, well, it's a chance, it's a gamble.
Yeah.
Or draw, or flood.
You didn't have irrigation then.
No, but he did. Wilkerson did.
Oh, that's right.
So I told Berman, I said, no, by George, you sunk your tooth in it. Now I said, you just stick it and stick to it.
Well,
just keep it up.
But he had a lot of ways of prizing. I remember.
What do you mean?
Putting a little pressure on it or something.
Oh, Wilkerson did.
Yeah.
Yeah, trying to force him into sell it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he tried everything in the book. And he tried bringing me flowers and candy and everything else, trying to butter me up so that I'd talk Berman into selling.
Oh, this wasn't just a casual offer.
No. I knew what he was up to. But I was determined that when Berman got into that mess, I didn't want him to plant melons that year anyhow.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted the pasture like I always have, the cows.
Yeah.
I hate to mess with crops because it's so risky. Come in and sit down, sugar. So I told Berman, I said, you got this crop going now, you just stick with it. If it means we lose our shirt, I want you to stick with it.
Yeah.
All right, he says, but if I lose my shirt, it's going to be your fault. Well, as it turned out, what did we get? I think it was, we cleared 10,000 and he cleared 10,000.
Yeah. Yeah, just a huge amount. Huge.
Mm. So,
Now, he, let me see, he, just one thing after another. For one thing, at the very end, I was down there when they're loading.
That's right.
And he gonna load them all out, you see. And Berman would have to take his word for the
truckload.
Truckload.
They could take two out, and then we'd only get paid for one.
Yeah.
Mm. We'd only get the weight ticket on one. So a lot of times I'd be watching how many little trucks, you see the little trucks would go out into the field, then they'd stack the melons onto the little trucks, then they'd go up and unload at the big truck, at the semi, at the around the corner in the laneway there where I couldn't see them, you see. Well, I'd count how many, I spent many a day counting those trucks going out of there, you know. I didn't get a dishwasher or a floor swept, but I watched those trucks. And those trucks would go back to that semi. Well, it took so many trucks to fill a semi. So I'd count them as they were going out of the field. I couldn't watch the semis. So all I could do was count the little trucks going down there. So when I thought he'd have a truckload full, I called Berman, and Berman come from the university, and he'd get there by the time the semi was going to leave. Then we'd get the number, the tag number of the semi, which I had, you know, on hand. Every time I'd go down to check the mail or something, I'd always copy down the tag numbers. And there was several trucks there that we had, that he had marked down that went out that I knew about, and I had the tag numbers. And when Berman didn't come in and catch him, and I caught him by getting his tag number.
And Berman had to go to the scales.
That's right. He had to go. No, he didn't go with him. He went and checked on him later. Went to the weight station and checked on the weights that went out that day.
He didn't have to be there when they were
there. But he took the weight tickets that Dickinson gave him. Wilkerson gave him, Dick Wilkerson. He took the weight tickets that he gave him, and he'd also check to see if there were any more, you see. And then I had the tag number, so all he had to do was give him the tag numbers of those trucks to get the weight tickets.
Oh, yeah.
So we caught him at it.
At the weigh station, they'd have the tag number on the
They had the weight to that tag number, you see, listed. But you have to get it that day. You can't wait and go the next day because they'd destroy them. They wouldn't have a record of it. So that's the only way we could keep record of it. And there were several trucks that weren't marked down there that we wouldn't have got paid for if we hadn't kept up with them.
One semi would be a good number of them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're big as a freight car, aren't they?
Yeah, you've got quite a few in there. I don't remember the weights on them.
Oh, they're just huge. Just an endless number of melons.
You figure, he was going to get only $4,000. He's going to get, our profit wasn't going to be over $4,000 before he was through with us one way or another, you see.
Yeah.
So the way we kept track of him, we ended up to $6,000 more to the good.
I'm telling you. Now, and then the agreement was, I remember Berman kept doing things that was in the agreement for him to do. One thing was to put down the irrigation or to pay the men to work the irrigation or a lot of
was that now? We paid the fellas. We paid the labor. No, you're thinking about with Smith. Harry Smith, aren't you?
No. I don't know anything
about
that.
Maybe it was Wilkerson. Let's see, we paid the labor. But it was up to Wilkerson to find the laborers, and quote them a price. And he had quoted them one price and quoted us another. And he was shortchanging them, you see. He quoted us, I think, $4 an hour, $5 an hour, something, and he was only giving them, $2.50, something like that, an hour.
Yeah.
And they were mad about it. The laborers were mad about it because he really didn't promise, he wasn't paying them what he said he was going to promise them. He's trying to cheat them out of their money. So they went around along there with a very thin, sharp-bladed knife, something similar to this one, maybe thinner yet. And they went around and jabbed the watermelons. Just put a hole in. You put a hole in a watermelon, and that's ruined. Sours. So they went along there and did that because they weren't getting their price for them. When the melons got to the other end, then nobody had to throw them out. Nobody got paid for them. So that's how we come across that. We found out what was happening because they told Berman they had to throw out several melons because they were cut. And that same thing happened in California. Some mushmelons. Some farmer had some mushmelons. By the time they got to California, they were all rotted. They were loaded here in Florida, were shipped to California. By the time they got to California, the guy that bought them from the farmer didn't get anything for them because they were rotted. They couldn't go to market. They wouldn't buy them at market. So they ruined that business.
Well, remember.
There's a lot of, there's a guy right now, he's doing time in somewhere in Pennsylvania that wanted to buy out Harry Smith's melons. Remember we had melons in there with him. And he came to us and he wanted to buy our share and Harry's share of the melons. And we didn't do any business with him. And he came back I don't know how many times. And he worked for Huff over here. Huff's the one that sent him to prison. Can't think of his name. But anyway, he was, how they caught him, what, how they sent him up was he was punching time cards for laborers that wasn't coming to work. And they were paying, he was accepting the check for them, signing them and cashing them. And they weren't even, they weren't even there reporting for work. And Huff caught up with him and sent him up the creek. I think he's doing 5 or 10 years. I don't know. I didn't. Freddie Woods told me about that here about a week ago.
I tell you, this vegetable world is something.
I don't like it. I don't like it. It's good money if you make it, but you got everything to worry about.
Yeah, and it's a worry.
It is. It's not worth the worry. I worried more than those 3 months than I have in all my life when we had those watermelons.
Yeah.
Because we had so much money wrapped up in them.
Yes.
And all the pasture. And then they wanted to put clover in behind the watermelon. That tied up the whole pasture there for that duration. And the cows just got behind. Remember they got down so poorly then?
Oh, I'm telling you.
And I had a heck of a time. So this year, I don't care how much he complains. We just buy and feed and everything if we get, to the place where we have to.